children. What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Good evening and welcome back to Mask's weekly radio show on Family Matters. Mask, mothers and fathers aligned, saving kids, kids of all ages and all stages for all mental health struggles, including addiction. If you know somebody that wants to join a parent support group, we still have them by Zoom. Please give them our number. Our confidential number is 718-758-0400. I will repeat the number. Maybe it's for yourself, a loved one, a neighbor, or someone you usually would sit next to in shul. Our number again, remember, all calls are confidential. Our number is 718-758-0400. If anyone needs a referral for a therapist, an inpatient or outpatient program, maybe you're still looking for a school for your loved one, please share our number so that we can help you get to the right professionals for whatever it is that one may be struggling with. So tonight, I'm really, really happy to have on with us Dr. Chaya Leiba Kobernick, who's a clinical psychologist, and she specializes in DBT, which she will explain, and other evidence-based modalities. Dr. Kobernick works with teens and children and works with the adults. I would like to welcome her on. She has the CBT DBT Center. Welcome, Dr. Kobernick, and thank you for coming on again. Always happy to have you on.
Such a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for the work that you do and for having me on.
Well, thank you, Dr. Kobernick. I really wanted to bring up speaking about parents of children with personality disorders. You know, there are so many, Baruch Hashem, we should say, thank God, that there is so much availability of mental health resources being offered today, both in person, both online, on Zoom, and Instagram, Facebook, so many different ways of getting help as a result of COVID. That is the silver lining that we have since COVID, which was so deadly and so painful to be a part of, but thank God we're all well. But the mental health has really changed for so many. Families have struggled with so much anxiety, abuse, being home together for so many, you know, marriages. There've been so much more abuse happening. And a lot of families struggle with underlying, you know, their genes, where the anxiety may kick in to different mental health diagnoses, and there's personality disorder. So I want to hear, first of all, how you got into this area to specialize in it, please.
Sure, that's a great question. Most of my training is in cognitive behavioral therapy, and more specifically, dialectical behavior therapy, or DBT. And actually, I went to a training many, many years ago are working with substance use disorders. I didn't end up going into that area too much. But one really interesting treatment modality that I was exposed to there is called CRAFT, or community reinforcement. And that model is all about working with the family of somebody with an addiction. And I just loved that model. It really interested me. And I was very curious about it and read a lot about it at the time. And then later, after I did my initial DBT training and got a lot more specific training in doing DBT with teens and with children, those models all kind of made sense to me together. So DBT is an amazing treatment for people who struggle with big emotions. I don't like to give a particular diagnosis because I find that people who struggle with big emotions can look so different and have different diagnoses, and it becomes less relevant when you're looking at that particular piece of the picture. And I find that piece to be the most important one. And what's so fun about getting to work with this type of population from children, teens through adults is that I really get to see the same kind of person as an adult. I get to see them as a child too, and really have an impact on the rest of their lives. And that's so rewarding. And I really love that work. But what really stuck out to me about these different models was the way that family gets incorporated. Sometimes, even when the child themselves or the adult child as well is not interested, motivated, capable for whatever reason of being in treatment at that time. So like no judgment on that person, just for whatever reason, they're in therapy and it's not helping. They're just very stuck. They're very sick. They're really in a system that's not supporting them, or whatever's going on that's making it that it's really impossible for them to be moving in treatment. Family work can be so powerful. And that's kind of how I got into this path.
Wow. So I know Chaim Winter, the therapist, when I started Mass 25 years ago, was working with the young adults, the teens, and the parents. And after so many years of it, he said he went into play therapy because he got to see before and try to help them before for prevention of at risk. And he decided after going into play therapy, like it's so much more gratifying to be able to try and start young with them. So not to turn into bigger, little problems, little kids, little problems, big kids, big problems.
Yeah.
So that's what it reminds me of.
Yeah. The same problem that I see in adults, it really is the same problem in kids. It's just once you're dealing with an adult, it's harder. It's harder. It's been going on for a longer time. So yeah, there's a lot to do with a kid.
Right. So that's why I really wanted to have this talk, because we're going back to school and the young kids, there are a lot of schools that, you know, may call parents and say, your child's ADD, ADHD, your child should be evaluated, whatever. And we tell parents, listen to what the school is telling you. Don't fight it. They're living in the school 8 hours a day, many of these children even more. They have to be successful in the school setting. Go and evaluate your child. We are not saying give meds or don't give meds, but don't fight it. Don't say, why are they picking on my child? Why are they, you know, school just started. They don't even know my young child. They know they need to be equipped to be able to have 30 kids in a classroom. Not every child is able to sit through for whatever reason. I'd like you to talk about that for a minute, please.
Absolutely. I think that you're so spot on in terms of if we want, you can always choose to homeschool your child, keep them out of school. But if you want your child to be in a school, and this, you know, goes for anything, if you want your child to be in a school that has a certain rule that you don't want to, that you wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't normally expect that from your family, If you want your child to be able to thrive and feel good in that setting, then you've got to follow that rule. So same thing, if the school is saying that they're seeing some issue and they're suggesting an evaluation or looking into something, or I often get a lot of pressure from the school of like the kid needs to be in therapy. I you know, you want to listen to the school and you want to work with them. At the same time, you also want to be realistic about what is actually going to be helpful. So, you know, sometimes you get a teacher who's saying like, they got to be on meds. And that I would also, you know, what do they really mean by that? Do they mean like the child is not cooperating or following directions in the classroom? Okay, then that's what we need to work on. It's not that medication is going to solve that necessarily. It might, but it might not. So more importantly than one particular solution is understanding what exactly is the problem. So that's where I sometimes get into trouble, because I do a lot of parent work and family work over child therapy. There's not a lot of great research on there, or great evidence rather, for treatment of children for behavioral related issues. For anxiety and depression, yes. But for other child-related stuff, we get a lot further working with parents and with family in general, like family as a bigger picture, rather than with individual child therapy. So that's, I think, you know, useful for families to so understand what the problem is and try to address that rather than getting stuck on what the solution should be.
Well, I just want to mention that on the Mask Help line, when parents call and say they have a youngster, 5 years old, 8 years old, 10 years old, and behavioral, and they want a therapist, we do recommend that the parent see a therapist, not the child, and they should assess whether or not the child should come in, or the therapist works directly with the parent, just like you said that you do. So Dr. Kobinick, I'd like you to discuss personality disorder. Some therapists give a definition, speak about it, and some therapists work in another fashion. Can you discuss the way you work with those families, please?
Sure. So first of all, you know, personally, I try not to get too stuck on diagnoses unless there's some reason to. Personality disorder basically as a category means a set of symptoms that are more persistent and pervasive. So meaning they like carry off over time. But for example, you know, a lot of the clients I work with have similar symptoms from childhood that kind of persist into adulthood. And it looks different over time, but I find the whole categorization of personality disorder is just a really easy way to get stuck rather than get movement. And if we think of it behaviorally, we can understand the particular learned behaviors that make up this set of symptoms rather than categorizing it and getting kind of stuck in it. So particularly many of the families that I work with have kids, and by the way, through adults who really struggle with experiencing their emotions in a big way and then getting locked into different problems because of that. So very often they'll struggle with sustaining relationships, or with relationships getting very chaotic or having a lot of problems in relationships because their emotions are experienced in a big way, and they can, you know, easily feel invalidated or hurt. And just struggle in that way. It can be hard to manage their emotions, and so they might turn to doing other different behavioral things that could end up being violent or aggressive, either towards themselves or towards others, and also just really keep them stuck and have a hard time moving forward. So and it's going to look different. It really is going to look different for a kid through an adult, but it's the same set of problems. Like I keep saying, that experiencing their emotions in a big way. Now there are, I will say there's many different personality disorders. I'm talking particularly about the kinds of families that I work with. Very often people will give a diagnosis of borderline personality disorder, or will say borderline traits, or talk around that diagnosis. But I find that there's so much stigma around it, even amongst mental health providers, that I really just find it more helpful to focus on the actual problems. And also, not just in terms of stigma, but also in terms of stuckness, that when we get stuck on it's a disorder, it's harder to actually look at what's going on and deal with the actual problem.
Right. So what are some of the important principles you would teach parents when working with young children and teenagers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And by the way, I would say also with adults. So oftentimes I even see parents who, you know, they've married off all their other children, they've got grandkids, and they've got this one adult child who's still stuck living at home or kind of really taking over the whole family experience. So it's kids, teens, and also adults. It kind of plays out in a similar way. So when I work with parents, when a child is, and by the way, you were saying before about, you know, when somebody comes in asking about their 5-year-old, we'll say, you know, follow the therapist, whether they want to see the child individually or not. I hold by the same principle for a teen and for an adult as well, because very often a 5-year-old is not going to really benefit from individual therapy as much as they'll benefit from their parents going to parenting. But it can be the same thing for a teen or an adult. And we get really fixated on the kid needs to be in therapy when really that's not the most important point. The most important point is what's going to be the best thing for this person's long-term mental health. And sometimes you're going to get further by working with the family. So my point is, I'm just highlighting before I answer your question, why even for an adult, I would recommend family work sometimes over individual work. For somebody who's amenable to treatment, who's motivated, involved, invested, even just to a small degree, a great therapist has a lot of tools in their toolbox for increasing motivation and commitment to treatment and to, you know, building their better life. But for somebody who's really not capable or in a space to do that for whatever reason, family work can be so powerful. So some of the things that I teach, first of all, violence is non-negotiable. Sometimes I'm working with families and I'm shocked to hear what's going on in their homes, the threatening or the actual things that are going on. And that has got to be a strict no-no. And there are a lot of ways that we can figure out how to make that. And I know a lot of these ways are not comfortable or fun, but that has to be like a non-negotiable. It has to be like off the table. But I find the most important principle I end up working on with families is, and this is why the diagnosis point I was making before is so important, because, you know, you see these kids who are different, who are struggling, and the parents, I'm telling you, kill themselves, bend themselves over backwards completely to do whatever they can for the child. And the child really is struggling. I'm not trying to take that away. The child really has struggles. The family really is killing themselves to help. But whatever the family is doing, unfortunately, in what I see in many situations, ends up keeping the child stuck in the long term. So, you know, if forever we were trying to kind of like set things up to not bother them, to not have anything trigger them, to give them accommodations in school, to help them, to pick them up from school whenever they're struggling, whenever they're having a hard time, to kind of work around their problems and accommodate the problems, that unfortunately, unintentionally keeps problems going, because that doesn't end up being a kid who can then get a job or can go to school or can just, you know, deal with the rigors of adulthood, because they're so taught that if they continue with problems, then they'll get the help that they need. So for example, if I, you know, need to buy dinner, so I need money, so I'm going to work in order to make the money in order to buy the dinner. But if I know that if I say I'm just having a hard day and my family's going to buy me dinner anyway, then why should I go and buy the dinner? That's a very simple example, but meaning we take away the natural motivation that kind of is built into existence when we support people. Now that's obviously a tricky thing. I'm not saying like, you know, don't care about people. I'm not saying that chesed is a bad thing. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just saying that when people have mental health struggles and the system tries to help them, unintentionally, the system might reinforce dysfunction rather than reinforcing healthy behavior. And the most helpful thing that the parents can do is to try to set up a system where we can allow for natural consequences. Meaning we can allow for the natural thing. Like, you didn't go to the store, you didn't buy the food you want, now you don't have dinner. You didn't go to work today, so you didn't get money, so you don't have food for dinner. And now you're hungry, and that's it. You didn't, you know, make the money for rent, and now you don't have rent to pay. You don't have money to pay for your rent. That's a problem. And now you have to deal with that. I can be sympathetic. I can validate that it's hard. I can be there for you. I can try to help you, but I can't kind of take away the problem for you. So a lot of, so teaching families that principle, then, you know, we have to figure out how to apply that to particular situations. But understanding the concept of natural consequences and accommodation is a huge piece. I also teach just a fundamental principle of when you have to reinforce what you want to see, or at least approximations to what you want to see if the actual thing you want to see isn't happening, and ignore what you don't want to see. That can be really, can be a really hard one for families to figure out the particulars of, but really understanding those principles can be so guiding in understanding, like, you know, families will ask me, like, do I need to do this if it's triggering for her? And the answer is no, you don't. You don't need to accommodate the dysfunction. It only keeps the dysfunction going. We have to figure out ways to work around that, because we're setting the adult child to continue on with those problems. So those are some of the main principles that I teach.
I know that parents struggle, you know, the Yiddish mama, the Jewish mom that always feels that she has to help and do and overdo and overcompensate. So it is definitely been difficult for so many that join the parent support group. They need to just learn that piece that you just discussed. And it does take time to be able to sit on your hands and not do something that you're used to doing for the one that's struggling with a mental illness, for them to have the natural consequences. So a real important piece that is addressed in the Dr. Ackman parent group on Monday night, if anyone wants to join that Zoom parenting group for additional support, whether you see Dr. Kobenick, in addition, it's always good to have a parent support group. So you're welcome to call 718-758-0400. If you're seeing any therapist, you're welcome to join. We will send you the Zoom information once you register. So Dr. Kobenick, what do you say to parents, how long it can take for you to work with them? Is it an ongoing? Is it limited to certain, the DBT, the CBT, the DBT programs that you offer? How long is it, please?
So it really depends on what's exactly going on and what we're kind of expecting from treatment. When parents come for like a consultation, especially parents of adult children, even parents of very young children as well, I would say, sometimes it's a matter of just giving them these principles in a very clear way that parents can understand how it relates to their particular situation. And then they can move forward with that information and decide how to apply it on their own. And that can be even one or two sessions. And then sometimes families find that their situation is complicated. It's been going on for a while. The child's needs are complex, and how it interacts with the family dynamics is just complicated. And so we start off with those basic principles, basic, not so basic, but start off with these few principles. And then we figure out nuance of how to apply that to each particular situation going on for the family. So that's, you know, that piece. DBT treatment for adults, teens, for adults and teens, I will say, is usually 6 months to a year, depending on the severity of what's going on when we start. And DBT for kids, you know, we start off with parenting, and that itself can take a few months. And then once we've done the parenting work, we can add in skills for the child and family. We have a skills group for girls, And if we don't have a group for your age child or your gender child, we can teach that individually. And then individual therapy for the child, if that's helpful. And sometimes that's just even, 20 minutes a week, something to just help them apply what they're learning to particular situations. So that's DBT. And CBT, it depends on what the particular problem is. If somebody's coming for trauma or for depression, depending on the age of the child and the age of the person and how long things have been going on for, it's going to depend.
Dr. Kopenick, we get a lot of calls about how do I get my adult child into therapy? What do you say to parents?
So I always say, there's such a focus, like I was saying before about the school saying, like, get the kid on meds, right? It's a similar idea, like get the kid into therapy. And when the goal is get the kid into therapy, that's a very interesting goal. Why is that the goal? You got to ask, what's the function of this? Why is that the goal? If the goal is that we need to help this child because they're, or this adult rather, because of their mental health struggles, well, then we want to ask ourselves, is this the best way of going about it? Sometimes it is. And if it is, usually you're not going to have to push that hard. If you're having to push so hard or figure out ways to kind of like bribe the kid or whatever, then probably it's going to be more effective for you, the parents, to go yourself. Not for therapy. By the way, it's not therapy for yourself. If parents are coming to parenting, they're not, we will recommend therapy, individual therapy for parents who need it. This is not individual therapy for the parents. The child or the adult child is the client. And our whole treatment is going to focus on that adult child. We're just going to go about it in a different way. So doing parenting work doesn't mean you're going to therapy. It means that you're doing the work for the adult child or the child who's not ready or able to do that work. So no need to push a kid or an adult who's not interested or available to go to therapy, really, no need. If they're able and willing to go, absolutely, that can be very helpful. But it's not always the most important thing.
Well, thank you. We're running out of time. Thank you, and I hope we'll have you on again soon. This is so important for parents to learn and understand before getting even in the door of the therapist, just getting ready for therapy. Thank you, Dr. Kopenick.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And hope to have you on again. I'd like to wish everybody a very good evening, a beautiful Shabbos, and always remember, hang in, hold on, and virtually still, hug tight. Tonight's show is in memory of Rivka Bas Yisroel. Please consider to go online to maskparents.org and make a donation so that we can continue with all our programs. Thank you and have a good night.
If your refrigerator, your washer, your dryer, or any other major appliance in your home breaks right now, do you have an extra $1,000 laying around to fix it or buy a new one? And hey, that's on the low end. Wouldn't you rather spend a dollar a day and make sure all the major appliances in your home are guaranteed to be fixed or replaced? Then call the Home Service Club right now for a free quote and a free month. Trust us, any major appliance in your home is guaranteed to be fixed or replaced. You could spend a dollar a day and have the peace of mind and the coverage for all your major appliances. Or you could be prepared to shell out thousands of dollars or more without protection. So call right now and get a free quote and a free month. Call right now.
800-869-9139. 800-869-9139. 800-869-9139. That's 800-869-9139.
Are you interested in hosting your own radio show and podcast, or perhaps a TV program? TalkLine Network can help you get on the air from 1 hour weekly to 24 hours a day. Ideal for ethnic, foreign language, medical, business, and religious broadcasting. We also have full-time radio stations for lease, as well as FM HD channels. For more information, please call 212-769-1925. That's 212-769-1925. Or email zevbrenner@gmail.com.
TalkLine Network Radio, America's longest-running Jewish broadcast network. The voice of the Jewish community.